All right, welcome back. FF Dynasty 260 proudly presents episode 11 of the Redraft Podcast. This week, we are recapping the craziness that was the trade deadline and all things week 8 of the 2018 NFL season. My name is Pat Loftus. You can find me on Twitter at @Dynasty_Pat. I'm joined this week by just Mike and I this week, just the two of us. So, Mike, say hello. Tell the people where they can find you on Twitter.
What's up, guys? Glad to be back. You guys can find me on Twitter at MikeSports22. Have all kinds of cool content coming out in the coming week, including an article breaking down all the deadline trades we're going to go right now and more so. So, Pat, Let's get to it, shall we?
Jump right into it. I guess the first one, you know, we hit on Amari Cooper last week. Let's talk a little bit about Demaryius Thomas going to the Houston Texans for a fourth-round pick. We talked a little bit about it kind of pre-show, and we kind of have different views on this, so it sounded like, Mike, you were a fan of the trade, so let's get your take. And I'm kind of on the opposite end of the spectrum here, so we'll start with some good news first, or a positive spin on it.
Sure. It's very simple to me. It's an upgrade at quarterback. You go from Case Keenum to Deshaun Watson. There's nothing more needs to be said. With Will Fuller being hurt, he steps right into that number two role. He's in the same position as he was before, number two receiver with a number one who has a high volume usage rate. And, you know, I'm just glad he's out of Denver. It makes Courtland Sutton relative. Demaryius Thomas isn't being used on check down and flare routes and poor slot wheel routes and crap. And, you know, hopefully with the Texans on a 5-game winning streak, the offense is clicking. Watson's not getting dinged like he was to start the year. He could step in, fill in Will Fuller's target share. And again, the quarterback upgrade. Fourth round pick is a great deal for a guy who's, you know, 30, going to turn 31 in December, has never had an injury history, no off the field stuff. And for a team that's kind of young on offense outside of DeAndre Hopkins, a little bit of veteran leadership.
I totally agree. It's a huge quarterback upgrade. It's a huge offense upgrade as well. Everything is trending up for Houston. My concern, you know, this week, you probably can't expect much from him because they just got traded. They got Sunday afternoon game. So if he plays, it will be very sparingly. They're on a bye next week, so you're not getting any real input or anything really valuable from Demaryius Thomas from a fantasy perspective until at least week 11. By then, you know, you have Hopkins, you have Kuti fully healthy. I don't know. I think it's just going to be a battle for targets, and, you know, you're not going to see the target share drop for Hopkins. You know, Kiki proved himself that he can, you know, he can play in this league and he deserves his targets and his snaps. So I don't know if a 31-year-old free agent wide receiver is going to be, you know, the guy that's going to be taking snaps and targets away from those two. And that's on top of, you know, an emerging tight end and what's the guy, Jordan Thomas. Thank you. And possibly Donta Foreman coming back. So you got a lot of weapons in Houston. Thomas is a nice addition, but I don't think he's going to have the impact that that you do.
Well, I don't think he's going to all of a sudden return to his, you know, wide receiver one, high end.
No, not at all.
He's currently the 31st receiver in PPR, and I think he gets a slight bump up. Maybe he creeps into 26th, 27th ballpark range. I just think it's going to be a little more consistent and a lot less frustrating games where one week he has 18 because it gets a garbage time touchdown, and then the next week he gets you 6-3 for 30 yards. On it's like you're going to get a little more consistency. I agree. Nothing's coming out of Hopkins. Hopkins is still the guy. He's still going to get his 29% target share, whatever the hell it is. I do worry a little bit about, you know, the emergence of Jordan Thomas or Kiki Kuti making more of an impact in the last couple of weeks. So we'll see what happens. But all in all, it can't be any worse than what it was in Denver, can it?
No. It's definitely not going to be worse.
So I'm not saying go out and buy this guy or try and trade him or anything substantial. But, you know, you've got the owner who's got him, and it's like, you know, well, I wasn't playing this guy before, and it's like, you know, he's running the bench. Now you might be willing to play him in the right matchup or even the flex spot weekly. So it's not a great move. It would been better if you went to, like, Indy or something. But still, anywhere but Denver would have been an upgrade.
Correct. Now, in Denver, he was averaging 7 targets a week. Does that go up, down, or stay the same?
I would say it stays around the same. Maybe it takes up to 8.5. It's really going to depend upon how much the Texans do pass the ball. If they can continue this success with Lamar Miller and Alfred Blue, and once Foreman gets back, run, he's going to get squeezed because we know it's not coming from Hopkins. But if they have to pass a little bit more, things pick up a little bit, the defense gives a few more points, et cetera, et cetera. I think he gets around the same targets. Maybe he gets up to 8, but I'll just take 7 targets from Watson over 7 from Keenum any day.
100% agree. Let's see. The next big name that got moved from my Detroit Lions, Golden Tate, heading to the defending Super Bowl champ, Philadelphia Eagles, for a 3rd-round pick. I absolutely love this trade. I hate to see a player of, you know, Golden Tate's caliber leaving the Lions, because he was paramount to the turnaround here. He will be missed here in Detroit, but that kind of return for a 31-year-old slot receiver who will need to be re-signed this offseason. You weren't going to get anything better than that. The Lions aren't doing anything this year in terms of making the playoffs or even making a run. So get the capital while you can. Good luck, Golden Tate. We'll miss you. I hope you go get that ring in Philly.
Yeah, it's always tough to see a fan favorite for a player who's really given his all for an organization to have to go really over contract issues and whatnot. But as we know, the NFL is a business. Things happen. Mm-hmm. But the fantasy aspect of it, I don't know his value really changes all that much. He was, you know, in Detroit with a half-decent running game, Galladay and Marvin Jones around him, so he was not getting a huge usage rate. And I think in Philly, it's going to be very similar with Ertz and Alshon. So to me, he stays in the same ballpark, the mid to low-end wide receiver 2 in PPR, maybe takes a kind of a little bit of a tick back because they do have Aguilar. But I think he's going to step in, take over as the number 3 guy in that offense. And if you have Wentz, I mean, unless you have him and Pat Mahomes for some reason, trade one of them. But Wentz is a week-in and week-out starter now the rest of the way through. He's healthy. He looks good. And now they just got another dominant receiver. Makes this offense even more explosive.
Yeah, so the running game is coming around. You know, you've got I don't want to say a three-headed monster, but Adams looks good this past Sunday. So you're starting to see that offense coming to form, and you're going to add a guy who is the yak king. You know, the target share will probably go down, but he is he'll be a viable asset and a viable addition to that
Eagles. And knowing how smart Doug Peterson is in that Eagles offense, is they'll find ways to get him the ball in non-traditional ways, whether it's off a quick screen, off an RPO, or hell, we saw Cordell Patterson play running back. Maybe they'll give him a couple snaps back there.
Jet sweeps. They'll get him the ball. And this is another one where he gets traded and he immediately goes on a bye week. So he has 2 weeks to learn the offense, but you'll see an immediate return from Golden Tate coming into week 10.
Absolutely.
And the last kind of – the big name as far as, well, offensive players. Offensive guys. We won't get into the defensive trades. Rams, way to go. Should we just etch the – etching the Lombardi trophy now? Jeez.
Pretty much.
All right. If you watch the Packers game this past Sunday, you probably thought to yourself, well, that guy's going to get cut or get traded. And sure enough, Ty Montgomery gets shipped to the Baltimore Ravens for a 7th-round pick in 2020. That's basically saying we were going to cut him, but we will literally take anything for him.
By definition, exactly what it means. Yeah.
Yeah.
He goes from Green Bay to Baltimore, where it's running back hell. So
here's a Ziploc bag full of air. We'll take Ty Montgomery, please. Deal. I'm honestly not surprised he got traded. I'm surprised Green Bay got anything for him. He goes to a spot in Baltimore where there are a few questions. So it's a little bit easier for running backs to come in and provide a little more value in terms of fantasy right away. But Baltimore is pretty bleak. You know, they had Buck Allen and Alex Collins, and I don't know. Is Montgomery fantasy relevant rest of this year?
The answer is no. I mean, unless you're in some big 16 or 18 team league and you get points for special teams, the answer is no right now. If you weren't playing him before, you're not playing him now. Situation is practically the same. He's throwing the depth chart. They got two guys in front of him they like better. Baltimore's just working out backs, and they figured, you know what the hell? Instead of bringing in some no-name guy off the practice squad somewhere, let's bring in Montgomery. He's a former third-round pick. Cost us basically nothing. Bag of air.
And right.
We'll see what kick the tires on. He has experience playing receiver, back, kickoff. Now, if he starts to creep into Buck Allen's work, well, then he might become relevant. But I highly doubt that happens. It's just, you know, again, practice squad guy or Ty Montgomery. So
yeah. Right. So that pretty much does it. I mean, there were, you know, other trades that went down, but those are the ones that are going to impact fantasy and fantasy football the most. So we'll move over to injuries real quick. We'll just burn right through these because there weren't that many. The biggest one, I think, over the weekend, Will Fuller tore his ACL. His season is over, which led the Texans to go out and get Demaryius Thomas. Ronald Jones left the game early with a hamstring injury. The timeline there is a few weeks. So let's, you know, call that 2 to 4 weeks, check back in. But he's not really fantasy relevant. He was just a bad year for Ronald Jones. And then the last one, the biggest names, probably Tyreek Hill tweaked his groin. The timeline that we're looking at or the status we're seeing is uncertain. So definitely monitor that. That's a big hit to that Kansas City offense for sure.
Yeah, and if Tyreek does not play this week against Cleveland, which might be the smart thing to do in the long run, get him well for the postseason.
Yes.
Sammy Watkins is a top 12 receiver. I know he's going to get Denzel Ward, but you know what? Watkins put up 30 points last week. He has talent. We all have the bag on him, but he's got talent. Ward's a rookie. They're going to be going against Cleveland. I know it's Cleveland. So it's Cleveland, but he is a top 12 play for me if Tyreek Hill's out of the game.
Yeah, this is definitely, you know, this might be just what Sammy Watkins needs. He needs that opportunity to shine. And, you know, it stinks that Tyreek Hill went down with an injury, but this is, you know, his opportunity to step up and play and just make that offense even more dangerous when Tyreek Hill comes back.
Absolutely. It's just, we're going to have to see what happens. Hopefully Hill's not going to be out too long. Hopefully it's just a week because we're all looking forward to Kansas City, LA, and what, 2 weeks is it in Mexico City?
I'm looking forward to Kansas City games every week, to be honest.
That's going to be the Super Bowl preview, I think.
You're probably not too far off. And if it's either not, that or New England, if that's not the Super Bowl, I think a lot of people are going to be surprised.
Yeah. Exactly.
So, all right, let's get into our top performers from the past week. We'll run through these as quickly as we can. We'll start with quarterback, and Deshaun Watson was our QB1 this week, 30.96 points. Cam Newton was our number two quarterback this week at 27.96 points. And Mike, you are actually propping up, or you're moving Cam Newton up your big board. So let's talk a little bit about Cam Newton and why you're moving him up your big board or your big list.
Okay, so in six of his last seven games, he has scored 23 or more fantasy points and 4 points per passing touchdown leagues, despite the fact he only has 3 touchdowns during that stretch on the ground. We all know Cam likes to use his legs, get in the end zone, but he hasn't done much of his legs lately. However, he has thrown 2 or more passing touchdowns in every game since week one. So he's actually beating teams with his arm, which is quite impressive. Now, last week, I wasn't too hot on Newton because there's the Ravens. They're tough against quarterbacks. And lo and behold, karma said, nah, and Newton had a great game. But this week, the matchup's better. Tampa Bay, friendliest team against quarterbacks. 26 points a game.
Be careful what ails you playing Tampa Bay.
And furthermore, the Bucs have given up an average of just under 31 points a game on the road to quarterbacks. They just changed their own quarterback. The season's looking bleak. They didn't trade DeSean Jackson supposedly because they think they're contending.
Okay. Win now mode, yeah.
So Newton's moving up in my rankings for the rest of the year a little bit because I think Carolina and New Orleans are going to duke it out for that division. And I think if Carolina is going to have any chance, it's going to have to be because Cam is putting the team on his back. Mm-hmm. But he's definitely my QB1 for the week. Anytime you play Tampa and you're coming off 6 straight to 20-point games, you're QB1.
100% agree. All right. Derek Carr, our QB3, 27.76. Jared Goff, our QB4, 26.5. Pat Mahomes, our QB5 at 26.2. Carson Wentz, we talked about earlier, our QB6 at 23.6. Russell Wilson, our QB7, 23.4. Andrew Luck, QB8 at 23.3. Mitch Trubisky, our QB9 at 21.9 points. Kirk Cousins, QB10, 20.6. Andy Dalton, our QB11 at 20.2. And Blake Bortles, our QB12 at 19.7. So the quarterback that I'm moving up after this week, wasn't in the top 12. He really only played one half of football this past week. I'm talking about Ryan Fitzpatrick. And actually, he checked in as our QB 13 this week, and he really only played a half, maybe a little less than a half of football.
It was about 17, 18 minutes worth of the game. So, yeah, it was
he a quarter. Put up like 18 points. He finished just outside the top 12 playing a half. So, with Fitzpatrick, you have to take the good and the bad. You know, he's going to throw interceptions, but he's also going to put up a ton of numbers because that offense in Tampa Bay is insanely talented. I think the Jameis Winston era in Tampa Bay is over. It's Fitzmagic from here on out. And like I said, you got to take the good and the bad. In that four-ish game stretch where he was a starter, he threw 11 touchdowns against four interceptions, three of which came in one game. So, you take that three interception game out, and Fitzpatrick is probably the starter every game so far this year. Just know what you're getting yourself into, but he's also probably a top 15 quarterback for the rest of the season.
I agree. I think the Winston era in Tampa is almost certainly over, at least it is for this year. They're going to have to make a decision on that fifth-year option. It's guaranteed for injury, so if they are moving on, they are not going to risk him for injury whatsoever. But, we'll see what happens. Dirk Cutter is probably coaching for his job right now. If they don't get anywhere, they bring in a new guy, they may say, with the quarterback class being poor, we'll give Winston one last crack at it. But here's the interesting about Fitzpatrick. True or false, Pat? Fitzpatrick has more fantasy points than Eli Manning, Derek Carr, Dak Prescott, Case Keenum, and Alex Smith this season.
True.
Yeah. And he's played, three and a half games? If you count the half yesterday, it's
maybe four total, yeah.
Yeah. So, you got to take the good and the bad with Fitzpatrick. He's going to throw some interceptions. That's going to be just like, what the hell are you thinking? But with the talent they have around him, D-Jax, Mike Evans, Godwin, Humphreys, the two tight ends, they're going to score, and the defense won't stop anybody, so they're going to have to score.
Yeah, and that's, he's a top 15 guy moving forward, and he put up some insane numbers to start the season. Now, he's not going to go out there and put up 40, 45, 50 points a night, but I don't think it's unrealistic exactly to see him in the mid-20s every week. So, and then he gets himself in a shootout, you're probably putting up 40, 45, so.
Yes.
So let's switch it over. I'll make my, moving down, I'll make this short and sweet. If you're a quarterback in New York and you're playing for the Bills, maybe don't show up to the game this week. you weren't starting any, you weren't starting Derek Anderson. You weren't starting Peterman anyway. Yikes.
It's so bad that Allen got hurt, and who would blame him if he's sitting there going, this is still kind of...
It still hurts. I just can't get it loose. The elbow's still a little sore. It just doesn't... Something doesn't feel right.
Derek Anderson's getting knocked around like a ping pong ball. Got a concussion.
Yeah, dude. Yeah.
Now Chicago gets Nathan Peterman. How long till he gets benched for newly signed Matt Barkley? I put it over halftime.
Who scores more points this week? The Bears defense in fantasy football or the Bills offense in a real NFL game?
I got a better one for you. Who scores more points this week, the Bears DST or every Bills offensive player combined?
Ooh, is it bad I want to take the Bears?
There's got to be at least two pick six coming this week, at least.
Oh, and yeah.
Probably three or four more turns. It's just, I don't know what happened to Buffalo. They were a playoff team last, and they just said, okay, first time in whatever, it's 18 years, let's tear it down and start over.
Midway through the season.
No, even in the offseason, they were shipping off pieces left and right. Cordy Glenn, they traded Tyrod. It's like, I don't get it, but we're not going to go down that road.
Yeah.
The guy I'm moving down is Baker Mayfield, and it's a little bit surprising. First off, what the hell's going on in Cleveland?
Wow,
We're firing people over having sibling rivalry disputes. It's like, Hugh wasn't listening to Todd Haley. Todd Haley wasn't listening to Hugh. It's like, John's like, F this. You guys are both gone. Okay? Yeah. I don't want to put up with this nonsense. And frankly, nobody should want to. This is a NFL franchise, not, daycare center. Let's not fight like three-year-olds. So.
Right. Yeah, that was wild. When the news hit that Hugh had been fired, everybody got all excited and, finally it's about time. And then, okay, who's going to be the interim? And, my money was on Haley. And then
20 minutes later, he's gone too. Yeah.
Yeah. 20 minutes later, Todd Haley gets fired. So should be interesting to see how the rest of the season plays out for the Browns because, You know, they had some, I don't want to say they had some good pieces. You know, Haley was a good OC, could have been a good OC. They've got a ton of young talent there, and hate to see a whole season go to waste.
Well, they already got 2.5 wins this year. I think that's their quota for like 3 years in a row. So I think they're good. But sorry, Browns fans. But
yeah, you know, right.
They got young pieces. They got to just get it together. We'll see what they do in the long term at coach. The reports about Lincoln Riley going there, go back to Coach Mayfield. I don't think he's crazy enough to go to Cleveland. I think he's happy in Oklahoma. Maybe Jerry Jones can give him $12 million a year and say, hey, come on, coach for America's team. But no way in hell he's going to Cleveland.
No.
But back to Mayfield. Last week I said to start Mayfield, and, well, I was wrong. He was disappointing, just 14 fantasy points. Now, this week I have him outside my top 10 at 12, despite all the teams being on a bye. We got 9 teams on a bye. Like we talked about, the firing of Hugh Jackson and Haley makes this dysfunctional team even worse. But what's really concerning me is Mayfield's regressing, not progressing. And the Chiefs' defense has actually gotten better against quarterbacks the last couple of weeks. Over the last 2 games, they've given up just 25.4 total fantasy points to opposing quarterbacks. By comparison, the previous 6 games, they have allowed opposing quarterbacks to score 20 or more in 5 of those games. So with the change of head coach and offensive coordinator, with the most dangerous team coming into town and everything else, it's just the matchup looks good on paper, but Kansas City is getting better. There's too much dysfunctionality in Cleveland, and I would rather start Joe Flacco this week, honestly.
Bold. Bold strategy.
Well, Flacco is playing Pittsburgh in Baltimore, and when he played Pittsburgh in Pittsburgh early in the year, he had like 22 points. Pittsburgh's defense isn't very good. You know, I'd rather take the seasoned guy who has weapons than Mayfield, who's scrambling around with, you know, who knows what the new the running backs coach takes over as the OC is going to change things up. It's like, it's just messy.
No, I agree. Flacco gives you a much safer floor and probably a higher ceiling than Mayfield this week. So, I can't blame you there.
Yeah, and unfortunately for me, in a couple of weeks, I held him to Mayfield for this couple of game stretch here, and it's burned me bad, and I'm losing because of it. It's unfortunate.
So that does it for our quarterbacks from week 8. And since it's just Mike and I this week, you know, we're not getting input from Seth and from John. We're going to add something new here. We're just going to take a look at some of the quarterbacks this week and anything that stood out or anything that was interesting that we'd like to see. And I'll go first here, and I'm going to talk about Russell Wilson and what he did to my Detroit Lions. He managed to go 14 for 17 for 250-ish yards and 3 touchdowns for a perfect passer rating. Russell Wilson is back. I expect to see him in the top half of the top 12. He's a top 6 quarterback, I think, moving forward. We'll talk a little bit more about some of the weapons that they have because some of the guys, you know, that could show up later and are moving up and moving down. So I like Russell Wilson moving forward. I don't know. Am I crazy for thinking that, or is that fool's gold because the Lions have just been atrocious?
Not in the slightest bit. Russell Wilson is always that quarterback you don't want to draft because he starts off the year slow. The Seahawks start off slow. And then right after the bye, he gets it in gear, and they take off, and he starts playing well. I agree. I don't want to say maybe 6 because we have Wentz and Mahomes and all the guys who are constantly putting up numbers, but he's definitely a top 10 QB the rest of the way for me. The Seahawks are in playoff contention, surprisingly, despite how bad that team is in reality. They are going to push for a wild card spot. I don't think they get in, but they're going to fight to the bitter end. And Russell Wilson is doing it with his arm, which is good, and he's, you know, we've seen Baldwin struggle, but we see Lockett and now David Moore pick up the pace. So I like him. What I'm going to mention is about Andrew Luck. Coming into the season, everybody was either on the Andrew Luck is back train, or you're saying nobody misses a year with a shoulder injury and then goes back to themselves, their same self. Well, those guys are wrong, plain and simple. Luck has scored 22 or more fantasy points in the last 5 games, despite playing some pretty decent defenses, Houston, Buffalo, the Patriots. He has 3 or more touchdowns in every game, going 4 or more in 3 of them. Now, here's where the Colts have gotten interesting. They have a running game now. Marlon Mack got back-to-back, 100-yard rushing games?
Yep.
And they have not given up a sack. I saw this somewhere. They have not given up a sack in 3 weeks.
Wow.
It's exactly my thought. The Colts offensive line, no sacks? Andrew Luck holds on the ball too long, no sacks. It's mind-boggling. This Colts team has not only become fantasy relevant with the two tight ends, Marlon Mack, and Naeem Hines is doing, you know, borderline flex stuff despite being the second back in the run there, T.Y. Hilton. And with Jacksonville and Tennessee combined seven straight losses, Indy's right there with an easy schedule over the next couple of weeks. They have the bye this week, then they have Jacksonville, Tennessee, Miami, Jacksonville, right? And then they play Houston in week 14, which may decide the division title. And if not, the AFC is really weak outside the elite couple of teams. They could easily get a wild card spot. And I expect Luck to keep putting up these high touchdown numbers. While he's not doing a ton of the yardage, 156 against Buffalo 2 weeks ago, 239 against Oakland Sunday. If you're in a league that plays with six-point passing touchdowns, Andrew Luck is gold for you. I don't care what the matchup is. I don't care if it's Jacksonville. I don't care if it's the 85 Bears. You play his ass.
I agree. No, it's, you know, as you, if you listen to us, you know, preseason or even early season, you know, we there's a lot of back and forth on Andrew Luck, and it's, I personally didn't expect to see this. I'm hoping he would get back to this eventually, but not this good, not the Andrew Luck of old, you know, this early in 2018. So it's nice to see him playing well. It's nice to see him providing value not only to the Colts, but to us fantasy football players as well. So I'm glad he's back. I totally agree. Andrew Luck is, you know, he's another one top 10, top eight guys every week. He's matchup proof.
Yeah, he's top three or four for me. Outside, if you have Pat Mahomes or Aaron Rodgers, to me, he and Carson Wentz are three and four. You got to play these guys every week. It's just the matchup doesn't matter anymore.
Yeah, yeah. Good stuff, good stuff. Let's move over to running backs, knock these out. Surprise, surprise, James Conner, our RB1, 38.2 points. Todd Gurley, RB2 at 33.5. Marlon Mack, RB3, 28.9. Joe Mixon, RB4, 28.8. Adrian Peterson, our RB5 coming in. Actually, he and Alvin Kamara tied at 26.6 points. And Mike, you are propping up, or you're moving up Adrian Peterson. Let's talk about Adrian. Let's talk about old man AP.
Yeah, well, old man does it again.
Yeah.
This man is literally, I'm not even sure he's human. He might be a cyborg or something. He's 33 years old, and he looks like he's 27 running around people. It's amazing. So last week, he scored a season-high 26.6 PPR fantasy points. I know Chris Thompson got hurt partway through the game, but that man's got bruised ribs on one side, bruised ribs on the other side. I don't know how he's breathing, so expect a lot of AP going forward. But the 26 points, it was the third time this year he scored 22 or more. So he's consistently getting production. It's not like this is a fluke game. Mm-hmm. Over the last 2 weeks, which Thompson missed last week and then only played part of the game Sunday, Peterson is averaging 25 carries, 124 rushing yards, and 19.2 fantasy points per game. That is a low-end RB1. Fantasy owners took this guy in the middle part, the bottom part of the rounds, who got mocked by their league mates saying, oh, he can't do it. He's old. Look what we did last year for Arizona. He's got a better offensive line now. He's got a real team around him. This is a rejuvenance of an old man who's doing things like he's young again. And this week, I love him especially because guess who he gets? The second friendliest team in the league against running backs, the Atlanta Falcons, who give up 32 fantasy points a game to the position. And if Chris Thompson is out, AP's going to eat up 90% of that.
He's going to feast.
Exactly. And the Falcons have given up at least the league average of 24 PPR points per game to running backs in every game this year. They just can't stop anybody on the ground. They can't stop anybody through the air. It's why Matt Ryan is tearing it up, because they're behind all the time. And I think AP, without Chris Thompson this week, could arguably finish as the top three or four running back.
Yeah, I'm not going to argue any of that. It's spot on.
Like always, but you know.
all right, let's see. We got James White checking in is our RB7 at 25.4. Kenyon Drake making another appearance in our top performers, 23.5 points. Christian McCaffrey, 21.6 points. Latavius Murray coming in as our RB10 at 20.5. Chris Carson coming in at 20.4. And rounding out our top 12, Philip Lindsay at 20.2 points. The running back that I am moving up after this week is Aaron Jones out in Green Bay. They traded away part of the competition. I'm not saying, you know, Tymont was eating into his share, but they traded away one running back. This week, Jones was the RB 17. He had 12 carries for 86 and a score. He put up 16.6 points. That's his highest output this year in terms of points, yards, and carries. You know, Jamal Williams, the luster is starting to fade on Jamal Williams, so I think we're going to see a whole lot of Aaron Jones moving forward.
I agree. The Aaron Jones era has hopefully begun. I know the Packers don't like this idea. Mike McCarthy must not like him for whatever reason. Maybe there's some personal issue there. Like, you know, I'm not going to speculate, but
yeah,
we come with all kinds of crazy scenarios, but we'll see what happens there. Hopefully with him gone, the Packers will bring in a third running back because they're not just going to carry two, but it'll be some guy of a practice squad somewhere. Jamal Williams seems cemented as the number two guy. Aaron Jones has had, two straight games with double-digit fantasy points. So hopefully this Montgomery trade, while it doesn't signal much for Montgomery, it means they are fully committed to Aaron Jones, even maybe in a three-down back role.
Yeah. Yep, I like Aaron Jones moving forward. I think it's finally time to see what the kid can do.
I totally agree. You know, he was playing well last year, just couldn't stay healthy. Then he got suspension this year. And with Montgomery gone, we'll see what happens.
But exactly. He's got
the first crack at it.
All right. And who are you moving down after this week?
Well, we said old man Adrian Peterson was killing it, and old man LeSean McCoy is getting killed.
Oof. Yeah.
Last week was nice and all, as he had 15.5 points, a season high, but he averaged less than 1 yard per carry. The offensive line was absolutely atrocious, and that was against the Patriots, not exactly an elite defense. Most of his points came on the 6 catches. If you take out the PPR bonus there, he had 9.5 points. It's not a great game. This week, he gets the Bears. And as we talked about it earlier, Nathan Peterman's starting. So I don't think the Bears are worried about the passing game too much. So they might stack 11 guys in the box entirely and just see what happens for the hell of it. But the Bears only give up 17 points per game to opposing running backs. I don't see how McCoy, who has struggled this year, to do much of anything thanks to the Bills shredding of their offense.
Yeah. I agree.
This is just to stay away. Play the Bears defense, and anybody on Buffalo at this point, borderline droppable. Yeah. I mean, McCoy might be the only one I bench. Everybody else is drop. It's just disgusting.
Yeah. All right. And then the running backs I'm moving down this week, basically all Jets running backs that aren't named Elijah McGuire. This is where I should be moving just two guys up. It should be Jones and McGuire, but Elijah McGuire is eligible to come back this week from the IR. Isaiah Crowell was a great, great addition for roughly 2 weeks. Outside of that, he's been borderline terrible, I'll say. The Jets run the ball 45% of the time. They're running the ball 27 times a game. You know, McGuire as a rookie did show some promise. He had 88 carries. He averaged 3.6 yards a carry. He caught 17 balls for 177 yards. He scored 2 touchdowns, 1 on the ground, 1 through the air. I think, you know, he's got fresh legs. Why not think? I know he's got fresh legs. He hasn't played at all this year. So you're starting to see Crowell fade out. Powell's on the IR. Trent Tannen's a rookie. I think you're going to see a lot of Elijah McGuire moving forward for the Jets. So if you're a Cannon owner, if you're rostering Crowell or Cannon, you might want to try to go out and grab McGuire as well, because the Jets are committed to running the ball, and it's going to be McGuire moving forward.
I agree. And if you're in a league with an IR spot, this guy should already be on a roster, because
he
can come off IR any day now. And with Bilal Powell gone, they're going to need somebody to catch balls out of the backfield, even if, you know, Crowell still keeps some of the early down work. You know, I have a number of leagues where I've tried to keep him, and it's been hard because only one IR spot, which is really messed up. But you know, if you got to burn a bench spot, he's worth going.
It's worth it.
Running backs are hard to find at this point now, and you know he could be starting by week 11.
Yep, right, so just in time for that playoff stretch. I managed to get him 2 weeks ago and stash him on the IR. So
there you go.
You got to practice what you preach, right? We're talking about guys. We better be rostering them. So. All right, so let's take a deeper look at here. What's a situation, or what's something that you're looking at in terms of the running backs, you know, after week 8, just in general, something we haven't touched on yet, Mike? What are you looking at here? What intrigues you?
Well, I'm probably going to screw myself here because I have a number of shares of this guy, but James White, for all those who said to me in the past, James White, he's not the guy. They got other running backs, yada, yada, yada. Well, he's the RB5 right now, guys, so I'll just leave it at that. But
yeah,
with Michelle coming back, he's still a critical part of this offense. They have that dynamic two-headed monster. And as we saw last week, it didn't matter they didn't run the ball. They just threw it to him 10 times.
Right.
So, again, his value is much more substantial in PPR because you're getting those catches, and that's a big chunk of his production. But who doesn't play PPR anymore?
Right.
So, you know, if you're in a standard league, move on because you get much more better options in PPR. These running backs like a James White, like a Chris Thompson, even McCaffrey to some degree, who don't have as much value in standard, they become more appealing. And every year people are complaining to me, oh, running backs are so hard to find. Play PPR. It opens it up.
Right.
We got to teach what we preach, right?
No, James White has been – he's been the constant there in New England. And I don't see – even when Michelle was healthy – it was a pretty even split, you know, not quite 50-50, but it was a pretty even split between Michelle and White. And with Michelle, you know, I don't want to say injury prone, but with Michelle being injured for a good chunk of this year, James White has been the constant. And I don't see him losing any ground or any shares to Sony Michelle, to Gillislee, to anyone that New England might bring in. It's James White is as the RB1 in New England moving forward. It's James White and everybody else.
I was so glad when they didn't trade for DT or Golden Tate today, because I have in 18 leagues, I think I have like 29 total shares of White at Edelman, and I was sweating it out till 4 p.m. Just don't make a move. Don't go get anybody who might, you know. But no, it's exactly the point. And, you know, New England, for years it's been, they can't figure out the running back. If you can't figure out the running back, they finally figured it out. It's Sony Michel and James White. Mm-hmm. And how you can tell, how I knew for years ago that they really were on James White. Remember the Super Bowl against Atlanta, and White had all those catches, had like 14 catches, it was a record for catches, etc. After the year, he had a year left on his rookie deal. They paid him pretty good money, especially for a guy who's not a three-down back. And that tells you that the Patriots really like him, and Tom Brady has a lot of faith in him, which means you get on the field. If Brady wants you on the field, you're on the field. So
absolutely.
If you got some, by chance, if you guys got some owner in your league who's gullible enough to trade you James White, go get him. There's no downside to him.
I completely agree. I think, like I said, it's James White, then it's everybody else in New England.
Yes.
All right. So what I'm looking at that intrigues me quite a bit here, it's the running back situation in Minnesota. You have Dalvin Cook has been nursing a hamstring injury. I believe Minnesota is on a bye next week, so you'd be looking at a potential, you know, fully healthy Dalvin Cook in week 11. What is going to happen in Minnesota when Dalvin Cook is finally healthy? Because all Latavius Murray has done the last 3 weeks is put up, I don't know, roughly 275 yards, 4 touchdowns on the ground. He's put up over 20.5 fantasy points a game in weeks 6, 7, and 8. If Lat Murray keeps this up, we get a great performance out of him in week 9. Week 11 rolls around. Cook is healthy. Murray is healthy, and he's balling out. Who's the starting running back in Minnesota? And what do you do if you're a Dalvin Cook or a Lat Murray owner?
It's going to be Cook because he's got the pedigree being the second-round rookie. But both guys are going to get run. And it may not just simply be because, you know, Murray's playing so well. They may decide, you know, we're tired of Cook getting hurt and out, in and out, the ACL last year, the hamstring now. It may be very similar to what Jacksonville does with Fournette and Hyde. They're going to run both guys to protect the young buck from re-hurting himself. Mm-hmm. Both, you know, they have playoff aspirations. And like you said, Murray the last 3 weeks, 20.5 plus points a game. And it's not like he's getting 30 carries. He got 15 in week 7, 13 last week, and he's just producing. So I would say Cook has to start. The problem is, though, you're going to have a situation where it's like, do you play one? Do you play both? Like, if you have Murray as the handcuff to Cook, right now you're living it because, hey,
right,
Cook, schmuck, I'm good. But when he comes back, and this is what I fear about Bell and James Conner, you're going to have a borderline 50-50 split.
See, now that was the other avenue I was going to go, is let's talk a little bit about Pittsburgh. I don't think Lev Bell is getting his job back. James Conner, not in Pittsburgh. James Conner has been an absolute stud
I
It's
agree.
not. It's not like it's a 3 week sample like Lat
No,
Murray.
no.
Because if you go before, you know, week six, Lat Murray was terrible.
Yeah.
James Conner has been. I think he's been in our top performers almost every week.
Yeah. Well, he's for the season the RB4, averaging 20, just under 26 a game. And if you take out the 3 week stretch between week two and four, where he didn't top 20 points and only had one total touchdown, the last 3 weeks, 35, 29, 38, two touchdowns on the ground in each game.
Yeah.
I agree. Connor is looked phenomenal. If you were one of those crazy dynasty owners who bought him on the cheap last year, thinking eventually he's going to get a crack at it, you're loving it right now. And I went out trading him for 2 months because I'm convinced he's the guy in Pittsburgh next year.
Yep. Bell, I agree.
Bell either comes back or he doesn't come back, whatever. Le'Veon's thinking, hey, whatever. And Connor's the guy next year. Pittsburgh has their future back, which is why I'm not convinced if Bell does show up, they don't just say, you know what, let's just burn him into the ground. Why do we care? This guy did us wrong. He didn't show up. He's not, you know, he says he's going to come back, then he didn't. And he says he's going to come back, and he didn't.
Yeah.
Connor's our guy. You know, let's run Bell into the ground. If he gets hurt, his problem, not ours.
Right.
So I'm not convinced he doesn't get his job back. Now, Connor may get more run than we anticipated, but I still think worst case, this is 50-50, if not more so, the Bell, because they have every reason in the world to run him in the ground and not worry about it, because if he does, you know, tear his ACL or something, we'll go back to Connor. Same
not
as
not their problem, yeah.
So I back to Murray and Cook real quick. I think that is more likely to be a 60-40 split to protect Cook as opposed to Pittsburgh. We can see it where it's 60-40 for Bell, and when the 60% it's Bell, they just grind him between the tackles and let him get beat up. Kind of like as an FU to him, says, hey, you did us wrong. Guess what? We don't care about your contract.
Yeah. I would hate to see that because I would, you know.
I hope I'm wrong, but I just have a feeling that when the offensive lineman came out and said, basically, you know, this guy's crying over $14 million. Ramon Foster's making, you know, $5.5 million. It's like there's bad blood there. And then the fact that, you know, he could have came in and said, look, I can't come back in the locker room. I'll sign the franchise tag, pending upon where you trade me today. They could have easily moved into a team that needs a running back substantially for maybe even a two. And, you know, there's no way I think he comes back and Connor just stays where it is and Bell's the backup, because they run him in the ground. Who cares?
Yeah. Agreed. I hope it doesn't happen, but if he does come back, it wouldn't surprise me if they did just run him into the ground.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. We'll see. Two interesting situations to monitor there. Let's move over to our wide receivers. We had a tie up at the top for wide receiver one. Marvin Jones and Sammy Watkins both came in at 30.7 points. Mike Evans, I don't know who's a bigger surprise there, actually. Marvin Jones or Sammy Watkins is the wide receiver one this week.
I would say Marvin Jones, because you got Gallagher, you got Tate, and it wasn't against Seattle. It's like, well, Seattle, while they don't have the Legion of Boom anymore, they still play well in the secondary at times. As opposed to Sammy Watkins, week in and week out, it's like, this guy's inconsistent, unreliable, and, you know,
yeah,
it was Denver. You think maybe Denver, you know, Chris Harris and Bradley Roby, maybe they can – nah, they're just like – oh, Tyreek Hill goes up. Sammy, you just take over.
Just torch us, yeah. All right, let's see. Mike Evans, wide receiver 3, 29.9. Tyler Boyd, 28.6. I'm going to run through these real quick because nobody in the top 12 is guys that we're moving up or moving down. Stephon Diggs, 27.9. DeAndre Hopkins. And Larry Fitz actually tied there at 26.2. Antonio Brown, 25.4. Will Fuller, even tearing an ACL and not finishing that game, Will Fuller was our wide receiver 9 with 23.4 points. Adam Thielen does it again, wide receiver 10 at 22.8 points. Wide receiver 11, OBJ, 21.6. And Julian Edelman rounds out our top 12 at 20.7 points. So the wide receiver that I'm moving up after week 8, we're going back to Seattle, and I'm going to talk a little bit about David Moore. So Seattle, you know, Baldwin's been struggling. Lockett has really looked like the wide receiver one there. They just cut Brandon Marshall. They don't have a tight end to speak of. So David Moore has been kind of the de facto wide receiver two in Seattle. And in the last 3 weeks, since he's gotten his big opportunity, 9 catches on 11 targets for 177 yards and 4 touchdowns. Now the catches, the targets, and the yards don't sound all that great. The 4 touchdowns in 3 weeks, That's the number that does it for me. He's finding the end zone. He's tied to an elite quarterback. I'm all in on David Moore.
I can't argue with there, and here's the reason why I like Moore. You're right, the yards, the catches, the targets isn't all that appealing, but the four touchdowns is an interesting fact. Last year, they lost Jimmy Graham, who had 10 touchdowns, right? Brandon Marshall was supposedly supposed to help lighten the load on that. Well, David Moore seems like
he gone.
They just let Brandon Marshall go, like you said. I think Moore kind of fits into that role. And with Baldwin struggling, I don't know if he's still lingering from that MCL injury or
what. I'm leaning the MCL, the knee was bothering him for a while, and I think it was worse than we were led to believe, because he should not have fallen this far this fast, unless it's injury related. Again, this is pure speculation, but I'm guessing the knee injury was worse than we were led to believe.
I agree. I don't think he's over the hill yet. I don't think Father Time's caught him yet. I think it's more, like you said, he had the knee soreness before the season. Then he sprained the MCL in week one. And Baldwin, who's never been a guy who accepts missing time, probably came back prematurely and is trying to fight through it, and he's just not producing like he used to. And it's fine for Seattle because they got the running game going, surprisingly, and Lockett and Moore. So, you know, if he's only doing, you know, four targets a game, which is what I think he's getting since he came back, so be it. But I do like Moore. I'm not convinced he's a guy you're going to plug and play. But certainly if you got a bench spot that you kind of like, you know, play with in terms of, you know, wait and see, lottery ticket kind of thing, he's definitely a guy I would go pick up.
He's a guy that, you know, he is, I believe he's firmly in the wide receiver four, wide receiver three conversation.
You have me at 4-3. You might be a little pushing it, but I could definitely see top 40-ish range. So you're talking, you know, 36, 37, 38. I could see him in that ballpark, yeah.
Yeah, he's a guy, you know, I'm not talking about him as a, you know, an every week like flex play, mm-hmm. but if you're a deeper roster, a deeper bench, you know, you're running out three, maybe four wide receivers, you're probably not going to find many better options than David Moore. I mean, again, all he's done is find the end zone the last 3 weeks.
Especially with six teams on a bye this week. Next week, I think we have four, and I think week 11, we have six more. So it's bye week season. You got to scratch and claw your way to the bottom of the barrel and find something somewhere.
Yep. Touchdown upside is crucial.
Very much so.
All right, who are you moving up this week, Mike?
So, I'm a fan favorite of Cooper Kupp. Loved him coming out of college last year. Thought the Rams was perfect, and he played well last year, and he's played well this year. But that's not who I'm talking about. Robert Woods. Hopefully Kupp plays this week, and if he does, it ruins my confidence in Woods a tad, but I still think Woods is a must-start against the Saints. Over the last 2 weeks with Kupp injured, Woods has led the team in targets, catches, receiving yards, at the wide receiver position. Goff trusts him, secondary to Kupp in terms of tight situations, third down, move the chains, red zone, etc. Cooks gets all the name brand and the flash and everything else, but Woods really is the de facto one in this offense. And again, let's go back to the matchup. Saints, friendliest team against wide receivers. 52 PPR points a game allowed to opposing receivers. Furthermore, they've given up 59 or more fantasy points in 43% of their games to opposing receivers. Sounds kind of redundant, but you can't pass on this Saints team. We expect this game to be high scoring with plenty of passing going back and forth. So Woods is, for me, a top 12 guy if Cooks does play. I'm sorry, if Kupp does play. And if Kupp does not play, he's top 6 or 7. He's got safe floor, upside, usage, you name it, he's got it. Plus, the Saints don't like Brandon Cooks. That ended not in the best of way when they traded him to New England. There was issues there about Michael Thomas and the contract and whatnot. They're not going to let him have his quote-unquote revenge game against them.
No,
they will.
No,
they
no,
rather,
no, no.
They'd rather get killed by anybody and everybody else but him. So, you know, I still start Cooks this week. I fade him a little bit towards the low-end wide receiver two range maybe, but Woods for me is a must-start no matter what.
Yep. No, he's it actually leads perfectly well into a guy that I'm moving down. I'm moving down Josh Reynolds. You know, you've got all the good stuff you just said about Robert Woods. You got Brandon Cooks coming back. I like the revenge game narrative a little bit more. I think they're going to try to get him involved early and often. You have Cooper Kupp, who they say is healthy and will more than likely play this week. So the Rams are going to have their full complement, their full, you know, core of wide receivers on top of Todd Gurley. I don't see any options for Josh Reynolds. He had his one big game, but it's all systems go for the usual suspects there with the Rams.
Totally agree. But how great is the Rams offense where Josh Reynolds is playing as well as he did, and he still can't get on the damn field?
Yeah, right?
I don't know what how the Rams did it, but they just went from a joke to a great team, all because my Redskins gave him Sean McVay.
Sean McVay. The wonder kid.
Why don't we fire Gruden?
All right, who are you moving down this week?
Well, I'm not moving down. I'm throwing him off my team.
Oh, boy.
Off ship, out of the airplane, whatever metaphor you want to use, goodbye. Corey Davis, got to go.
Yep.
Somehow, some way, fantasy owners, including myself, were convinced for the second season in a row that Davis is good. He's not. He's averaging just under 11 points per game this season. And if you remove the so-called, air quote here, breakout game in week 4 against the Eagles, he's averaging just 7.5 points a game. Not going to do it for me. Meanwhile, the Cowboys this week are the toughest team against opposing receivers, giving up just 28 fantasy points per game to the position. And furthermore, the last 2 weeks, the Cowboys, who have had a bye week to prepare for this game, have held opposing receivers to just 34 total fantasy points. Titans' passing game is god-awful ugly. I don't know what's going on with that offensive line. They're supposed to be good. They're not pass blocking worth a damn. Mariota is still clearly not right with that elbow injury. You couldn't pay me to start Corey Davis this week.
So, I Corey Davis, seasonal redraft leagues, he's borderline droppable. He is.
No, he's droppable.
He's droppable.
Obviously, you're going to hold on and hope for better luck. But redraft, I can't honestly say this guy's a top 50 receiver going through. I have him just barely in my top 50 this week, and that's, again, with 9 teams on a bye.
So, I mean, he's talented. The talent's there. Is this a Titans offense issue? I mean, it has to be. You don't have a healthy Mariota. You don't have a healthy offensive line. I don't know what's going on with Matt LaFleur, the OC there. I liked LaFleur. He's a Sean McVay, Kyle Shanahan disciple. I mean, he on paper, he's got the right pedigree to be a successful, innovative offensive coordinator. But who knows what's going on in Tennessee. But I think Mariota and Davis have been impacted the most.
Yeah, I agree. And just sometimes you get those situations where just things don't go right and there's no logical reason why. Taylor Lewan is being paid as one of the top 2 or 3 offensive tackles in the league. He's not pass blocking worth a crap. Conklin came off the ACL injury. Who knows how healthy he really is? We know Mariota's banged up. The running game just isn't getting going. You know, I don't know. They have talent. And you're right, Corey Davis, raw talent-wise, there's a reason why he was a top 5 pick. But right now, it's not coming together.
Yeah.
I can't figure out why. It's mind-boggling.
Yeah, there's not many viable fantasy options on that Titans team. So,
no.
Not blaming you for steering clear and dropping Corey Davis in seasonal leagues. So what intrigues me here, and this really isn't just a wide receiver thing, but I want to talk a little bit about Larry Fitz.
That's where I was going to.
And the Cardinals. Well, no, all right, let's talk. Fitz, I don't want to call it a breakout game, because he's not, he's been around. He's a seasoned vet, but this has by far been, his best game of the year. 8 catches on 12 targets for 102 yards and a score. 26.2 fantasy points. Are we finally seeing the Larry Fitz we thought we were going to get all season? Is this a product of Josh Rosen? Is this what we can expect from Byron Leftwich? I mean, is this what we can expect moving forward from the Cardinals offense? And I want to say yes. I think Leftwich he's going to be the answer for the Cardinals the rest of the year. And I think we're going to see a lot more of these games out of Larry Fitz than the 2.5 point clunkers that we saw earlier this year.
I completely agree. I don't think we're going to get 26 a game out of Fitzgerald. That was too much luck.
No.
But can we get, like last week against Denver, he had 14. Can we get that 14 to 16 point a game range, depending upon flow or whatever else? I think so. I think Rosen is starting to make progression, starting to look better. He had that god-awful game against Denver where he just looked like, a deer in headlights. I know what was going on. And give the kid credit. He came back, took the extra mini bye time, and got himself together and put on an impressive comeback drive in the fourth quarter against San Francisco. Mm-hmm. Him and Fitzgerald and Kirk both, I think, are going to be, I don't want to say wide receiver threes, because I think Fitzgerald has a little more upside being the seasoned vet. But I think both guys are going to be flex plays going forward, more so Fitz than Kirk, depending upon the matchup.
Yeah.
I think the turnaround is Rosen getting a little bit better each week, step by step. Mm-hmm. And more importantly, they got rid of freaking Mike McCoy.
Yes.
This guy's been fired three times in the last, what, 19 months or whatever it is? And it's like...
Just criminal how he's using... No, granted, their offensive line is garbage.
But the point is, David Johnson's not lining up in the slot or out wide. They're just giving the A-gap like he's Leonard Fournette. It's like, this is not how David Johnson works.
Just criminal usage of David Johnson. So, personally, when I saw the left, which was coming in as the OC, I thought I thought this week would be the David Johnson breakout week. I was not expecting the Larry Fitz breakout week or bounce back week. So for all you David Johnson, the people rostering David Johnson, hang tight. His week is coming.
I totally agree.
Hopefully week 10.
And with Leftwich taking over, he's Bruce Arians' guy. Hopefully he's bringing back some of those parts of the offense into the flow.
Yep.
If they did what they did against San Francisco on a midi bye with Leftwich, right? Imagine now they're going to have two weeks here for Kansas City with the defense. I know I talked about it a little bit better before, but still. Not a great defense. Talk it up and see what they can do with David Johnson, Fitz, and Kirk going forward. Their next couple of games, the bye this week, Kansas City, Oakland, Chargers, Green Bay, Detroit, Atlanta, and the Rams to close out the season. Right?
Outside of the Green Bay matchup, I like it.
Yeah, and even that I'm not that worried about because with the trade of Clinton Dix, they don't really have a lot of experience back there. I think Fitzgerald's going to – as much as I like Jair Alexander at the nickelback for Green Bay – I think Fitz is going to have his lunch.
Yeah. They're putting themselves in a good position to, at least fantasy purposes, help us out.
they won't win many games, but at least the dark dog days of Arizona earlier this season where Larry Fitzgerald's getting 5-3, 5-5, and David Johnson being used in the wrong way are hopefully over.
Yeah. We shall see. All right. Tight ends. This was it's kind of just like the rest of the season. It's a hodgepodge of tight ends in our top performers. The top two, though, shouldn't surprise anybody. Travis Kelce came in as our tight end one at 19.9. Jack Doyle with 19 points was our tight end two. Jordan Thomas, the breakout from this past week, our tight end three with 18.9 points. Jared Cook, 17.4. O.J. Howard, 16.8. Round out our top five. Our tight end six this week was Greg Olson. He put up 15.6 points, and he's actually a guy that I am moving up my big board or my ranks after this week. If you listened to us earlier in the season after Greg Olson got injured, we talked about this possibly being the year-ender, maybe even a career-ender for Olson, and we were sad to see him go because he has been a generational talent. I am so happy to see him back, and since he's come back, he's played 97% of the snaps for Carolina. So the foot is healthy. He's a full go. He's been second on the team in targets for two of the 3 weeks. So like I said, this week he was a tight end six. I think you're going to start seeing him in that top five every week. And, you know, as that rapport kind of comes back with Cam Newton, you're going to see these 15, 18, 20 point games out of Greg Olson. And he's going to be a guy that we're talking about every week for the rest of the season.
I agree. I don't know if he's going to get back to that, top three or four range, but the next, five to eight kind of guy, he's in that ballpark. It may depend upon the touchdown and not whatnot, but they don't really have a clear secondary option behind McCaffrey in that offense. They got a number of receivers they kind of like that they roll around with. Torrey Smith, Funches. DJ Moore looks good. If he's by some chance on your waiver wire, go get him because he's starting to come into form as their top outside guy. But Greg Olson is going to be, like I said, probably the 5 to 8 tight end range the rest of the way forward. And as he reworks that chemistry with Cam, not to mention also two foot surgeries in a little over a year and a half, it's got to be, difficult for him. So hopefully the foot thing's behind him and he rolls good going forward.
I was looking into, his snap share. I did not expect to see 97% of the snaps. I was thinking more along the lines, easing back into it, 75-85% of the snaps, until he was good to go. But Greg, you're good. All right. Go play the whole game. Go nuts.
Because Ian Thomas hasn't gotten it done for them. Yeah. And I'm like, hey, if the foot's good, you're good. Let's get this on with.
Exactly. All right. Let's see. Our tight end seven, Evan Engram, 13.5 points. Ed Dixon, tight end eight, 13.4. Eric Ebron, our tight end 9 with 12.7. Zach Ertz, our tight end 10 at 12.6. Hayden Hurst and Seth DeValve round out our top 12 tight ends this week. Hurst put up 10.9 and DeValve 10.8. Mike, who are you moving up after this week and why?
Okay, well, this might be a name many of you haven't heard before, but Chris Herndon of the Jets. And here's why.
Scored a touchdown the last 3 weeks.
Well, that's part of it. Yep. Despite only playing 40% of snaps, he has scored a touchdown the last 3 weeks while averaging 12 points per game. That's pretty good. With all the injuries to the Jets receiver core with Anunua and then Terrell Pryor cut, Robbie Anderson's dinged up. I know they just signed Rishard Matthews, but how much has he got left in the tank?
Yeah.
Sam Darnold is targeting Herndon more and more often. Meanwhile, the Dolphins are the 13th friendliest team against tight ends, but they get about the league average, so it's nothing to be surprised about 12.8 points a game. However, over the last 2 weeks, the Dolphins gave up 19.8 points to Michael Roberts 2 weeks ago and 18.9 points to, we mentioned, Jordan Thomas last week. Two touchdowns for both guys in both games. If you need a stream guy this week because you got Ebron on a bye, Zach Ertz on a bye, this is my streamer of the week, and I've hit about 60% of this so far, and I'll probably screw this one up now that I brag, but the Dolphins have given up 5 touchdowns to opposing tight ends over the last 3 games, like I said, 2 in back-to-back weeks, 2 no-name guys, and as we saw with Roberts this week, he went from just short of 20 points 2 weeks ago to last week, 0 targets, 0 catches, 0 points, so
you
can do worse, and I think this is maybe the beginning of something, but at the very least, he's a guy you want to play this week.
Yep, he is my second waiver claim this week. Somehow Jack Doyle is available. So Doyle is my first option, and Herndon is my second choice. So hopefully I get them both.
Because you're going to need Doyle in the bye. Yep.
I need Herndon this week, and then after this week I can go to Jack Doyle, and hopefully Herndon keeps this touchdown streak going. Who are you moving down this week, Mike?
I'm moving down Kyle Rudolph, and this hurts a little bit because I was kind of hot on him coming into the year, but it's just not happening. Yeah. Despite the good matchup against the Lions this week, I'm having a hard time trusting him. Over his first 4 games of the season, he was averaging 12 points and had 2 touchdowns scored. Not bad production. However, in the last 4 games, he's averaging just under 7 and no touchdowns. He's not getting it done in the red zone. The connection between him and Kirk Cousins doesn't seem to be there. And Cousins is throwing to Thielen and Diggs the majority of the time, and honestly, you can't blame them. They're two of the might be the best receiver duo in the league.
Agreed.
So at least Rudolph fighting for the leftovers with Laquan Shredwells of the world and everything else. It's just hard to trust him at this point. He has just one game this year with 6 or more catches and has failed to get 75 yards in a game. It's tough to swallow this pill because, again, I was so high on him coming into the year, but until he turns it around, I'm at the back end, tight end 1, tight end 2 range. It's hard to trust him.
Yep. And that's actually
touchdown or bust, and he's just busting.
Yeah. Now, I'm not going to use the B word with the tight end that I'm moving down, but it is getting a little harder to trust him on a weekly basis. And this is not going to be popular, but I'm moving Gronk down my list here.
Totally okay with it.
He hasn't scored a touchdown since week 1. He missed week 7 to back spasms. This is a guy that, he's notorious for missing 2-3 games a year for getting dinged up. And with back spasms, you never know when those could flare up again. Now, I'm not saying to bench him. I'm just saying, maybe temper your expectations. And if you are in a league where you are rostering Gronk, maybe it's time to pull the trigger on that trade and see what you can get for him. There's just too many other, we got the emergence of James White, Edelman is back, Josh Gordon, just all the other options in New England. It's no longer Gronk than everybody else. It's, there are other options ahead of Gronk on the Patriots. And I think it's, it might be time to start moving him down your big board and tempering those expectations.
I agree. I've had him as a tight end 1 or 2 each of the last 5 or 6 weeks, and it has not paid off. Now I got him down 3rd this week behind Kelce and Kittle, despite Ertz being on the bye. You're right. He's just not producing. I don't know if the back spasms is bothering him in the games. He's trying to tough it out. But here's the other thing that's a little concerning about Gronk, and you may not realize it. With the right tackle Marcus Cannon being out the last couple of weeks, they had to put Adrian Waddle over there, and he just isn't good at pass blocking. So they've left Gronk in to help double team, chip, block, etc. It's limiting his upside. And like you said, with Edelman and White really working the middle of the field and good, you know, chemistry with one another, Brady's just taking those two guys left and right.
Yep.
You watch the Monday night game, he was just Edelman, White, Edelman, White, Edelman, yep. White. Oh, here's Hogan. Oh, here's Gronk. You know, Edelman. It's just
combined
had like 19 catches.
I mean, Gronk, he's still the target share is still there. That hasn't fallen off. It's the catches, it's the touchdowns, it's the things that you expect out of Gronk every week. You expect 6, 7, 8 catches. You expect touchdowns. You expect, you know, 12, 14, 18 points every week out of Gronk, and you're just not seeing it.
What do you think about this? There was the report that Gronk totally confirmed that the Patriots were going to trade him to the Lions in the offseason. Mm-hmm. And he told Belichick straight up, you trade me, I'm not playing. I'm retiring. Yep. There goes your trade. I'm only playing for Brady. What if Belichick knew Gronk's done and was trying to get, you know, like he does all the time. He strips off Richard Seymour to the Raiders for a first-round pick, and he retires the following year. It's like, you know, I hope I'm wrong about this. I don't think I'm right about this, but
it wouldn't surprise me. I mean, Belichick's been right more often than he's been wrong.
And it's like, you know, what if this is just the last year the Patriots, why the Patriots are trying to go get another receiver today, right? They're trying to put all the chips in the basket to go
one
get
last run.
One more ring. And then, honestly, if they win this, it would not surprise me in the slightest bit if Brady, Belichick, and Gronk all walked out the door at the same time.
Yeah.
Which would cripple the Patriots, but you shouldn't have traded Jimmy Garoppolo.
Yeah. So. Yeah. No, interesting. It's an interesting take. I don't hate it. I mean, like I said, Belichick's been right more often than he's been wrong.
Yes.
So that will be – I want to talk more about Gronk, but I feel like we've spent a lot of time there. Let's talk a little bit about the tight ends in Indy. Now, Eric Ebron has been an absolute monster this year.
Yes.
This is what Eric Ebron is capable of doing if the Lions had utilized him the right way. I'm not going down this road because I feel like this is a topic that comes up every week with me.
It does. But
jaded Lions fan. with a healthy Jack Doyle and a healthy Eric Ebron, are we going to see both of these guys in the top 8 every week?
I don't know about 8, but probably 10, yeah, because they like to use two tight ends a lot. And outside of Hilton, they don't have any established, you know, pass catcher. That's why I was really hoping they go trade for a Tate or Demaryius Thomas today. But, you know, with Chris Ballard, as well as he has done with his draft picks this year, right, the two offensive linemen, the two running backs, Darius Leonard linebacker, I don't want to take draft picks away from him. Let him draft. Because they are not contending this year. They may make the playoffs. They may not. But in a year or two, especially if Brady does retire, they're going to be duking it out with Kansas City for the AFC title every year. Mm-hmm. It's going to be impressive. But back today, relevant today, I think both guys are top 8 options, maybe 10, worst case scenario. The target share and the snap count worry me a little about Ebron, but he has the one thing they don't have in the red zone, and that's an athletic, isolated kind of player where they could just line him up outside against the corner and Luck can throw back, you know, back of the end zone fades to him left and right all day long.
Yep.
And like I mentioned earlier, Luck is throwing touchdowns like it's giving out candy on Halloween, so I think both the top 10 guys, especially as we see the position, is Kelsey, Ertz, Gronk, Kittle you want to throw in there, maybe Jimmy Graham. And after that, it's like hodgepodge. Yeah. Who's this guy? Where name tags after that? So,
I'd be curious to see.
It may not be a pretty amount of points you get each week in and out. Ebron may become touchdown dependent to get you over that double digit mark. But even if he gets you 8, you're still talking maybe, what, the tight end 11, 12?
That's, yeah. Anything north of 10 points, you're looking at a top 12 tight end this year. So I don't think it's unreasonable to see both of those. And, you know, Andrew Luck has supported two productive tight ends that are way less athletic than Doyle and Ebron. So that's what I'm looking forward to the most starting in week 10 is a healthy Jack Doyle, a healthy Eric Ebron, and a healthy Andrew Luck to see what they can do together.
I totally agree. This Colts offense is going to be interesting to watch going forward because on paper, it looks like they don't have much, but Ebron, former bust, has played well. Doyle, first game back, 19 points. And I honestly thought they were going to say, you know, give him one more week, let him get through the bye, rest.
I think we talked about that last week that, you know, expect Doyle to be a full go in week 10 when they're coming off of their bye. I would have made a lot of sense, but he was good. Maybe they wanted to give him a chance, let him run. And if he came out, they had the bye to let him get healthy. But they got to see him in a full, they got to see him in a full game. He's got 2 weeks to rest. And now, you know, you're looking at two of the premier tight ends in the NFL on the same team for a healthy 6 week stretch, 7 week stretch to make a playoff push.
And they're going to be right there in it because it's them and Houston. I think Jacksonville, we could put a fork in them. Tennessee, same as well.
Yep.
Houston and Indy is going to be an interesting.
I agree. All right. So,
real quick, kind of makes Frank Wright look like an idiot for going for it in overtime. What was it? Because if you're taking a half a point, that I would have been basically, you know, net zero.
Yeah.
Now you're down a whole point to them. You got to win the matchup. And was it week 14 they play each other? So it's going to be interesting.
Good luck with that.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So anywhere different you're looking, anything in the tight end spectrum that stands out?
No, that was really – I was going to go to the same spot with you about the Colts tight end because that's the interesting thing. What's going on in Baltimore is a little interesting too. They got the four-headed guys. They got their Max Williams, the two rookies, Nick Boyle. It's kind of like a guessing game, but keep an eye out on that, especially this year if you're in a keeper league and you get to keep six or seven guys. If one guy starts to emerge down the way out at the end of the season – you might want to go ahead and pick up, depending upon how your keeper rules work.
Because
if one guy can separate themselves from the rest, and again, I'm pretty sure it'll be the Hurst or Mark Andrews.
Yep.
You might have yourself a sneaky starting tight end in 2019 on the cheap. So.
Yeah, that was the one. Looking at the bottom of this list, Ed Dixon, nothing going on there. Seth DeValve, nothing going on there. Hayden Hurst was the name that did stand out. So it's keep an eye on that situation.
And more importantly, he got the touchdown he got in that game was from Lamar Jackson, the garbage time. So if the Ravens do move on from Flacco in the offseason and have Lamar take over, maybe they got a little bit of a chemistry going there. We'll see.
Yep. I like it. So that rounds out top 12 performers. That rounds out the moving up, moving down, and just a little commentary on some extra stuff there from Mike and I. Let's take a quick look at week 9. And there are some really, really good games and some really, really bad games on this slate. Let's talk about the good games. So, Mike, what game are you looking forward to the most?
The ones with the most points scored. That's obvious.
Give
me the Rams and the Saints. That game should be high scoring. Both the Rams and the Saints are in the top 3 in points per game. Saints, I believe, are second. Rams are third. The game's in New Orleans in the Dome, which means Drew Brees should have no problems passing up and down on the field. Similarly for Goff, the Saints, we already went over, is atrocious defensively. Real quick, the run over. For me, both quarterbacks are top 10 options. I'm a little worried about Breeze because of how well the Saints can run the ball with Kamara and Ingram. I have Goff like third, Breeze like ninth. But both are, must start kind of guys. Mm-hmm. Gurley and Kamara are running backs 1 and 3 for me this week. Ingram's a mid RB2. If you got him, start Michael Thomas. All the Rams receivers you got, not Reynolds, but the big three, start him if you got him.
Yep.
They're all in my top 18, assuming Cup does play, which it sounds like he will. And here's the obvious factors. Don't play the tight ends, and sure as hell don't play the defenses. Seems simple enough, right?
Agreed.
And like always, you guys can find my rankings, starts to sleeper takes, and much more on the pinned tweet of my Twitter page, at MikeSports22. Got to sneak in the plug there. But
absolutely.
If you guys got any questions, let me know. This game should be the most entertaining one, and you know how the league expects it to be? It's the Fox Game of the Week. So,
I'm going for the Sunday night game. I'm looking
at Green. That's the other one. It's going to be good. Everything
Green Bay, New England. That's the game I'm looking forward to. Brady, Rodgers, the two greatest of our generation. Lots of offense there. That's one. Fire up Rodgers, Adams, Aaron Jones. Sneaky play. Take a look at Valdez-Scantling. I think he is really emerging in Green Bay as a go-to guy. Rodgers seems to trust him. New England, we hit on, Brady, White, Edelman. Temper the expectations for Gronk. But again, a lot of fantasy points here. So that's the game I'm looking forward to, is that Sunday night game. That should be a good one.
It definitely should be. You hear about the Michael Jordan GOAT commercial real quick that Kate was going to supposed to come on during the halftime of the show.
I did. And then LeBron fired up a tweet about that too. I thought that was great.
That was just – it just was like – yeah.
It's perfect.
I'm more interested to see the debate between Brady and Rodgers is the GOAT, and Jordan and LeBron. And I grew up in the LeBron era, not the MJ era, and I still think MJ's better.
We're not going down that path. We'll be here all night.
Exactly. I can be here for an hour on that. So we'll stick to football. But yes. Yeah. Those are the two games.
Yeah, it should be. Those are the two, like I said, two really good games. You got some bad games on the slate there, but those are the ones Mike and I are looking. Let's not talk about that. we'll stay away from that one.
Yeah.
So that does it. That's the Week 8 recap. Let us know what you think. You can find me on Twitter at @Dynasty_Pat. Make sure you like, rate, review the pod. We're everywhere. iTunes, Podbean, TuneIn, Stitcher, Google Play, we're everywhere. Make sure you check out the website as well, www.ffdynasty260.com. You can find rankings and start sits and sleepers and all that good stuff on the website. We're your one-stop shop for all things Dynasty and Redraft Fantasy Football. Mike, one more time, where can everybody find you and all your good content in the Twitterverse?
On Twitter, MikeSports22. Like Pat said, rate, review, let us know what you think about the podcast. Any specific questions, please let us know. We're here to help you guys hopefully win some titles and not look like fools in front of your friends. So
that's right. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll see you next week.
Take care, guys.